Chapter 2. Become Brave Enough to Wonder. I put down the drink and the drugs and picked up a boyfriend. Getting sober didn't mean that my addictive patterns went away. I transferred my addiction onto romantic relationships, food, work, and other vices that seemed socially acceptable. While I was deeply devoted to my spiritual path, recovery groups, and meditation practice, I was far from recovered. In fact, now that I was clean, I was no longer able to deny or ignore my huge, unspeakable fear, being alone. My codependent addiction was probably the worst addiction of all. I relied on romantic relationships to make me feel safe, lovable, and adequate. And when a relationship would end, I would immediately replace it with a new one. Underneath the codependency was a core belief that I was not safe. So I turned my romantic relationships into my source of safety. I thought that a partner could fix my pain and make me whole. I turned my boyfriends into God. The fear of not having a boyfriend was so debilitating that I spent years in relationships with people who weren't right for me simply to avoid being alone. Being alone made me feel like I was going to die. Whenever I faced a breakup, it would trigger a state of panic and I'd jump right into a new relationship to manage that impermissible fear. I worked hard to justify my codependent behavior because deep down it was too shameful to face. I defended that behavior in the same way I had defended my pre-sober drinking and drugging. In fact, it was a lot easier to admit that I was a drug addict than to admit that I was codependent. Codependency wasn't the only new addiction replacing the drugs. I was a workaholic. After getting sober, I embarked on a career as a motivational speaker and self-help author. My own spiritual devotion is what allowed me to teach from a place of authenticity and share vulnerably about my path. I became a raconteur, speaking to strangers about my journey of personal transformation. In fact, the more honest I was about my shortcomings, and no matter how ugly the truth, the more I could serve others because they could identify themselves in me. My work was created out of inspired spiritual action and a commitment to serve. When I was working, I felt spirit move through me. I felt connected to a higher power. I felt in tune with the love I'd always longed for. Without realizing it, though, my work became another way I tried to stay safe and run from feeling the impermissible. Despite the genuine love for my work and service-driven mission, my working style was another addictive form of seeking relief from my suffering. The search for relief. I believe that the root cause of addiction is the impermissible memories and feelings from the past, otherwise known as trauma. We run from our unresolved experiences and get caught on a hamster wheel of searching for relief. That relief comes in many forms. Drugs and alcohol, sure. But there are a number of behaviors that are less frequently identified as a form of addiction. We commonly don't identify acceptable and productive habits such as working overtime, a strict healthy lifestyle, even obsessive exercise as a form of addiction. But when those habits become extreme behaviors, they are merely another way we run. Addiction is a temporary form of relief for an addict. Relief from the core wounds of the past. An addict will turn to their drug of choice, socially acceptable or not, to anesthetize their suffering in an effort to forget about the past and experience relief in the present. The sad reality is that the relief is fleeting and leads to greater pain and suffering. Or addicts can replace one addiction with another and leave untouched the underlying condition. This is why the disease of addiction cannot be treated with abstinence alone. It must be addressed at the root level of emotional distress and energetic disturbances. I ran for a decade. I ran in and out of relationships in order to feel safe. I ran from accomplishment to feel adequate. And I ran by controlling every area of my life to numb the feelings of fear that lived in my subconscious. The more I ran, the less I had to feel. The interesting thing is that I had no idea the real reason I was running. My suffering was deep below the surface. Therefore, I was subconsciously running from fear toward anything that would give me a sense of control and security. I thought it was normal to work to the point of burnout. I thought it was acceptable to always have a boyfriend and or fear being alone. I thought it was funny that I was controlling and super type A. It was hard to even notice how fast I was running because it paralleled the rise of my career. Every year, my audiences grew larger, my public profile expanded, and I stayed sober. By the time I was 35, I had published 5 books and appeared on Super Soul Sunday with Oprah, who named me a new thought leader for the next generation. I was married and running a big business that allowed me to travel all over the world, leading talks and meeting fans. On top of that, I was hosting a regular radio show, creating weekly video blogs, generating a newsletter, recording digital learning products, appearing in the press, leading live workshops, and on and on. While successes continued to manifest in my outer world, my inner world was hard to maintain. I lived in a constant state of fight, flight, or freeze, always on the lookout for something to go wrong. I only felt safe when I thought I was in control of my circumstances. I'd spend every summer vacation in the library writing my next book and working hard to meet self-imposed deadlines. During the holidays, I'd sneak away to the back of my in-laws' house to find time to write. I remember each year my father-in-law would look at me and say, "Gabby, do you ever take a day off?" This made me feel defensive, and I would quickly justify my behavior. "I love my work, and I'm helping a lot of people. How is that a problem?" And I did love my work. When I was working, I felt safe, inspired, and connected to other humans. But it's also where I felt most in control. I called the shots. I didn't have a boss, and no one could tell me what to do. I didn't have to rely on lots of people to help me. I didn't have to fear the inevitable disappointment if someone didn't show up in the right way. In fact, it was only when I was working that security would momentarily set in. The harder I worked, the more praise I received from my contemporaries, publishers, friends, and family. I wore my successes like a badge of honor and told anyone who would listen about the work I did in the world. I desperately needed to validate my existence. While my true commitment to my work wasn't about the validation, it was, at the time, something I deeply needed to feel good enough and adequate. The toll it took. All addictions take a toll at some point, even the seemingly acceptable ones. Whatever we do on an extreme and unconscious level will inevitably catch up with us. Addiction takes us out of the present and inevitably disturbs our nervous system, as well as our physical and emotional condition. The work addiction started to take a toll on my body. The constant deadlines, responsibilities, and commitments became impossible to hold together. I lived in a consistent state of hyperarousal, which created a lot of physical tension. I broke teeth because of extreme TMJ, temporomandibular joint syndrome. I was in and out of doctor's offices trying to diagnose my chronic gastrointestinal issues, and I lived in a constant state of physical discomfort. I was looking for an allopathic solution to my physical problems. Whenever a doctor would suggest that stress was a contributor, I'd agree and remind them that I was a spiritual teacher with a daily meditation practice. But then I'd immediately ask for the diet plan to heal my gut or the mouth guard to fix my TMJ. I wasn't yet safe enough to address the root cause. I was still running from an unresolved fear that I wasn't even aware of. All the while, I continued to do weekly therapy, deep meditation practices, and spiritual development. My spiritual practices and therapy were always there to guide me back to relief, but that temporary relief wasn't enough to sustain the way I was living. I was stuck in a cycle of work addiction that would lead to burnout. At that point, I'd hit my knees and surrender. Then I'd meditate, pray, and do personal growth work to peel myself off the floor. I was so unaware of the ways I was running that I often acted like nothing was wrong. In my therapy sessions, I'd sit on the sofa across from my therapist and talk about all the great things going on in my life. Whenever she'd challenge me to look more closely at my feelings and patterns, I'd shut down. I didn't understand it at the time, but being challenged to witness the vulnerable parts of myself was terrifying. Buried beneath the successful story I'd created about my life was a terrified little girl, dissociated from her past, unaware of what she was running from. And ironically, being in the presence of someone whose job it was to care for me didn't feel safe. In truth, I dreaded those sessions because they challenged me to face feelings I wasn't yet ready to reveal. Vulnerability was a funny thing for me. Despite how hard it was for me to be vulnerable in therapy or relationships, it was easy when I spoke in front of audiences of strangers. When I was leading a live talk was when I felt most connected to God. The moment I stepped onto the stage, I aligned with the truest part of who I am, the love of who I am, the joy of being alive, and the genuine desire to help others establish their own spiritual connection. Speaking on stage, I became a channel for love and a conduit for spiritual awakening in others. The stage was my safe place where I could stand spiritually naked in my authentic truth. One night I gave a talk in front of 2,000 people. From the moment I stepped onto the stage, I was open, free, and extremely authentic. I was totally fearless, vulnerable, and willing to share my truth no matter what. I told personal, shameful stories. I cried messy tears, and I showed the most authentic side of myself. That night on stage, I saw my husband in the audience. He was smiling with pride, laughing at my jokes and winking at me during the Q&A when I caught his eye. When I got off the stage, he said, "Wow, that was incredible." He looked at me with such pride. Returning to the hotel room several hours later, the energy between us changed. The vulnerable, authentic, open, and free woman was gone, and Zach was left with a different part of me. The part of me that was anxious, disconnected, and aloof. This was a common scenario. I had no trouble being free and inspired on stage. That's when I felt safely connected to spirit. But when I stepped off the stage, I would enter back into the part of myself that was scared and desperate to stay in control. I was confronted with my need to control in 2015 when Zach and I decided we were ready to try to have a baby. At the same time, Zach had left his 10-year career in banking to run my business. He was highly qualified for the job, and I desperately needed his help. While all of this was full of exciting potential, it was terrifying to me. I had to give up a certain amount of control. If I were to be a mother, how would I work the way I'd been working? If I were to allow Zach to run the business, how would I maintain the level of authority that made me feel safe? All of this inquiry consumed my thoughts, although I never allowed myself to say it out loud. I didn't want to admit to myself or anyone else that I was terrified. No one can run forever. My resistance to releasing control continued to manifest in my body. I started having panic attacks, numbness in my limbs, brain fog, and worsening gastrointestinal issues. Days would go by when I'd try to hold it together only to wind up in tears saying over and over, "I can't go on like this." And I couldn't. Ultimately, my cries for help were loud prayers to the universe. My mantra was, "I can't go on like this. There has to be a better way." My spiritual practice was strong. I had a beautiful husband and a thriving business. Why was I so afraid all the time? There was no clear explanation for what was going on. This is when I started to wonder. I wondered why I'd become a drug addict. I wondered why I suffered from anxiety, panic attacks, other addictions, and depression. I wondered why it was so hard for me to be vulnerable in my close relationships. I wondered why I so deeply suffered with codependency and the ever-present longing to feel good enough. I wondered what I was running from. My willingness to witness the chaos and become open to a better path was a prayer. My bravery to wonder is what allowed me to ever so slightly surrender some control and let down my guard. Wondering why I was suffering allowed the truth to be revealed, even though it would take several more months of meltdowns and panic attacks to recover the true reasons why I was running. The inquiry was enough to put me on a true healing path. Become brave enough to wonder. When we become brave enough to wonder what we're running from or fighting against, we're inviting the universe to step in and guide our healing path. Within all of us are exiled feelings, unresolved experiences, and memories we think go away with time. But they cannot just go away. They deserve to be seen, cared for, and loved so that they can truly heal. Our fear of facing the emotions from our past gives them more power. Unresolved emotions affect every corner of our lives without us realizing it. We build up coping mechanisms and addictive patterns to avoid the pain of revisiting these feelings, memories, and experiences. Each coping strategy is a way to run from the emotions that can be triggered at any moment. Triggers like being rejected, being helpless, or feeling out of control, or being blamed or shamed, are among the many things that activate our deep-rooted suffering. The trigger activates the feeling, and an alarm goes off in our brain. Then we hide, run, or fight. We pick up the drink, binge on the food, text an ex-lover, start a new project, anything to hide from, run from, or push down the feelings we so desperately want to avoid. The problem isn't just that we're running, but that we are unwilling to face what we're running from and why. Uncovering these emotions must be done slowly and gently. You can't rip off the Band-Aid too fast. Some of these feelings have a long history and therefore take time to feel into. Early childhood experiences mold the way we live as adults. In an ideal world, a child would spend their earliest years in nurturing environments with strong attachment bonds. When a child feels safe and nurtured by their surroundings, it fosters optimal brain development and a sense of inner safety that supports their ability to effectively navigate the world. As infants and young children, we rely on our primary caregivers to keep us safe and alive. In fact, we come into the world biologically programmed to establish a strong attachment bond with our caregivers so that we can survive. It may be too overwhelming at this point to contemplate the ways you may not have been cared for as a child or how a trauma affected your sense of safety or worthiness. I understand how scary that can be. I'm not asking you to uncover the exact reasons you're running. That will happen at a slow pace throughout the book. For now, just be brave enough to wonder. In order to let true healing begin, we must become conscious of our triggers and the feelings that live beneath our destructive patterns. A huge shift occurs when you become brave enough to look closely at what you've been unwilling to see. The key here is to go slowly. No more time to hide. You might be thinking, this feels too heavy. I should just skip ahead or read one of her other books on manifesting. I get it. It feels like hard work to face our past and heal. That's true. But it's much harder not to face it, stay stuck in the negative patterns, and never know true peace. But facing our truth is a spiritual practice, and it's necessary in order to feel free. In fact, think twice before you skip ahead or pick up one of my manifesting books. This is my greatest manifestation because the more we heal, the happier we become, and the more joyful we are, the more we attract. Joy is the ultimate creator. There's no more time to hide. When the stability of the world around us is shaken, we can become immobile and try to hide from our feelings, or we can bust through and face the core wounds that made us run in the first place. At this moment, you have two choices. Keep listening or turn off this audio and run. If you keep listening, I promise you emotional freedom on the other side. And with freedom comes joy. That's a serious promise, and I wouldn't say it if I didn't mean it. If you decide to trust me and keep listening, I promise peace in the chapters of this book. Trust that the journey I'm taking you on is safe, and trust that you are spiritually guided. We will take it one step at a time. Right now, let's keep it simple. I'm asking you to start by becoming brave enough to witness your triggers and the ways in which you run. This curiosity is necessary to establish a clear foundation through which you can take the next steps laid out before you, the steps to free yourself from childhood patterns that continue to play out in your life. It's possible that you've never recognized your triggers or that you were running at all until listening to this book. Triggers are the moments when we feel most activated and possibly don't even know why. When triggered, you can revert to childlike behavior or turn to a coping mechanism to numb out the uncomfortable feelings. A trigger happens when an event activates an implicit memory, emotional response, that brings forth an unresolved experience that you didn't like or couldn't control. Almost anything can serve as a trigger. A song can trigger an implicit memory of a time when you felt unsafe. Or a scent of cologne can trigger the feeling of being with someone who harmed you. In my case, it was a feeling of being out of control or taken advantage of. Without being aware of our triggers, we find ways to justify our behavior to make it acceptable. Maybe, like me, you say things to yourself like, everyone drinks a lot, or it's totally normal to be stressed out all the time. Or maybe you haven't even tried to justify your behavior and have accepted destructive patterns as a part of who you are. Identifying triggers. For now, we're not looking to uncover exactly why you're triggered to hide, run, or fight. Instead, it's about looking at your patterns. I'll guide you through a writing practice of inquiry that is crucial on the path to freedom. We must be willing to look at what's up in order to show up for it. Do this practice when you have some free space for private, personal contemplation. It's valuable to do this practice in one sitting to allow the ability to get it all out onto the page. You may find that you want to return to this practice and add to it. That's fine. If for some reason this practice feels too overwhelming and you can't even look at your triggers, that's okay too. Come back to it when you're ready. Maybe for now you simply need to listen to this book to take in the concepts. Then when you listen to it a second time, you'll do the practices. Go at your own pace. If you do go ahead with the exercise, it's possible that it may activate you. So make sure that after you write it all out, go for a walk, work out, or even dance around the room. Big personal growth work can make us feel immobile. The best antidote is to physically shake it out. If you feel ready to begin, let's start by looking at the people, places, and situations in your life that trigger you to want to run, fight, turn to an addictive behavior, become overly reactive, or act out in some way. For example, it's common to be triggered by a romantic relationship when a partner reminds you of an unresolved implicit memory or experience you have of a parent or adult figure. Let's look closely for those triggers. Take out a journal and make three columns. In the first column, make a list of all the ways you get triggered. Some of my personal triggers were, and I say were because they have subsided, when I was out of control at work, being told to shush, being taken advantage of, being told I was wrong. Be specific in your writing. For instance, maybe a trigger is when your husband leaves the house without saying goodbye. You don't need to figure out why it activates you so much. Just write it down as something that triggers you. Be specific and don't edit a word. Let your pen flow without thinking. If you just write, you'll be amazed by what comes onto the page. Take a deep breath and begin the process. After writing the list in column one, move on to column two and make a new list of how each trigger makes you feel. For instance, whenever I was triggered by someone shushing me, I'd feel an insane rage brewing, as though I'd want to punch something. Be that specific. What feelings are activated when you're triggered? You may not be able to even recognize the feelings yet. Maybe all you notice is the desire to shut down, or you become so overwhelmed that you go numb. That's totally normal. Just record whatever feelings or lack thereof come up for you when you are triggered. Now move on to column three and record how you respond to your triggers and feelings. This is the column where you call out all your reactions and responses, all the ways you hide, run, or fight. Here are some examples from my own life. Trigger, being out of control. Feeling, I feel terrified. My stomach gets tight, my jaw clenches, anxiety takes over. How I run from the feeling. I try to control other people and my surroundings. I overwork to the point of exhaustion in order to get back into a place of feeling in control. Trigger. When someone tells me to shush. Feeling. I feel silently outraged and act defensive. How I run from the feeling. I push back on the other person, trying to figure out why they would shut me down. You may find yourself leaving some columns blank. There's great freedom in this process, even if you can't complete every box. Don't judge your process. Even if you fill out only one column, that's good. Be kind and gentle with yourself every step of the way. Don't overthink this or push yourself to go deeper. Honor yourself for having the bravery to even look at your responses. Look at the patterns. If you're ready, now look for any patterns among the feelings that trigger your response to hide, run, or fight. Take note of the two most prominent feelings that arise when you're triggered. Was it anger and fear, or judgment and defensiveness? Then take note of the two most common ways you run from those feelings, such as drinking, gossiping, overeating, shutting down, etc. You may even run from your triggers by going into a deep depression and catastrophizing. For now, look at the surface feelings and immediate reactions. This practice is a powerful inquiry that will shine light on patterns that have kept you living with a false sense of safety. Note that the feelings you have on the surface are real, but deeper feelings are underneath. Don't even try to face those deeper feelings yet. There's no need to rush. Please be kind to yourself. It can be painful to shine light on your triggers and the associated feelings and actions. That's why uninterrupted space to do the practice is so important. I highly recommend, however, that you don't do it before bed. Deep personal growth work before you go to sleep may interfere with your restful state. Instead, do this exercise at some point during the day that feels safe. It takes a courageous person to notice their triggers, to have the willingness to take the next right action and look more closely at your patterns is a major accomplishment. This brave inquiry promises forward momentum. It's likely that you spent your entire life avoiding and protecting yourself against these triggers, feelings, and reactions. That's the case for most people, even folks who've been committed to personal growth. Remember, I spent years in therapy performing for my shrink. For years, I pretended that everything was okay. It was only when I became brave enough to wonder why I was running that the next level of healing could set in. Breathe. A practice like this can bring up a lot of difficult and unwanted emotions. If you're overwhelmed, then use this moment as an opportunity to honor those feelings. To honor your feelings means to notice them, breathe into them, and accept them. Remember, the reason we run through negative and addictive habits is because we don't want to feel things from the past. When we honor our feelings, we can begin to relate to them in a new way. Seeing ourselves and all our big emotions with compassion and acceptance. 1. Breathe in deeply and allow yourself to be fully present with the feeling. One of the hardest habits to break is pushing away our negative feelings. Instead, give yourself the chance to become comfortable in the discomfort by breathing into them. 2. On the out-breath, visualize your body releasing energy. You may even want to physically shake out your arms and legs to actively let go of tension in your body. The out-breath offers freedom to release the tension and resistance. 3. Taking it further, wrap your arms around your body and give yourself a hug. Say to yourself, I've got you. It's safe to move forward. You are not alone. Let faith be part of this journey. Give yourself permission to breathe into the truth that you are supported and guided through every step of this journey. A spiritual presence of love will hold you and guide you, and so will I. I'm here for you on this path. I've laid out the steps toward peace and freedom in a way that is gentle. I will go slowly and keep you safe. Please know this. I care deeply about you, and I'm here for you all the way. We're in this together, my dear friend. Remember what I taught in chapter 1. You are not alone in this inquiry. I've spent over a decade running and suffering, but I never lost touch with the spiritual relationship that was guiding me every step of the way. That spiritual connection gave me faith even when fear overwhelmed me. Subconscious fears make us feel unsafe and alone. They are what made us run in the first place. But we can face those fears with spiritual guidance or love by our side. If you feel inspired, welcome a spiritual connection of your own understanding with this prayer. Thank you, universe, or use your alternative word, for helping me feel safe and supported through this personal growth journey. I trust I'm being guided. Prayers like this have kept me consistent in my healing journey. My unwavering faith in the universe is what allowed me to bravely inquire about what lived beneath my patterns. I've always relied on spirit to help me answer these questions and guide me. Today, when people ask me what I'm most proud of, my answer is simple. I'm proud of my courage to go to the places that scared me the most so that I could truly heal. Thanks to my spiritual relationship, I could handle some of the toughest circumstances with the faith that freedom and peace were on the other side. While it may seem terrifying to look at your triggers and your responses, I can assure you freedom is always on the other side. The feelings that make us most uncomfortable reveal to us what we need to heal. Fearlessly looking at your triggers and defense mechanisms can feel empowering if you let it. Becoming aware of your behavior shines light on what you've been hiding. We cannot heal what we cannot see. You are taking a stand for change. You are committing to heal. Just listening to this chapter is brave because it means you were willing to look more closely at yourself. Take that in. Your willingness begins the process of undoing the patterns you've set in. Become honest with yourself, and you become free.